home and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.
Yo, this is Michael Payne, and I host the Michael and Marcel Show on FUBAR Radio every Wednesday from 4 till 6 p.m. Thanks for staying at home. The only thing we want you to catch is a vibe. You're listening to Stay Home and Chill on FUBAR Radio, keeping you company through the coronavirus.
Back row and chill on FUBAR Radio.
We've got Maud Hurst in the studio. Thank you for joining us.
I'm really good. How are you guys?
Very good. I'm good.
Maud, for all our listeners, just to explain who you are and what you do, you're an actress and you are on The Vikings. The TV show, which is quite exciting. I love that time period in history.
I should have listened more in history, but I do actually like the Viking era. And my brain was all over the place in school.
What we read in the history books is really quite different from the show. So even if you had read up on it, you can still learn something else by watching it.
Thank you very much.
How did you get involved with The Vikings?
It's been like 4.5 years, I think, since I auditioned. And I'd just been travelling around Thailand and I came back to London terrified that I wasn't working. And I was like, And my agent was like, got this really cool show, do you want to audition? I was like, sure, great. So I went in, met the director, and it was a really last minute casting. And I think within like 3 or 4 weeks, I was told, and then flew to Ireland and started filming.
That is scary, the actor's fear, I call it. You know, like after university, for me, I just want to go and act, and you get this fear where you just don't know audition-wise or work-wise.
Yeah, I hate it. The first time you get to set, normally the first thing people go, hi, so what are you doing next? And you're like, I'm just really excited about this job,
you
actually.
You focus your mind on the day.
Day to day.
That's so true.
Well, okay, I've got something to admit. I've never been on a... I'm lying. I have been on a Viking-themed TV show. But when I was a teenager, I used to do something really, really, really geeky, and I used to do medieval reenactment.
Did you now?
It's like, oh, you're weird. Don't laugh at me, Joe.
I was laughing at a joke I've written down for later.
Okay.
About you being medieval.
No, honestly, I used to be such a geek. I used to spend majority of my weekends going all over the country, and we'd put on this show. You know, you go to castles or historical fairs or whatever.
I didn't know this existed.
For example, in Nottingham every year, they've got the Robin Hood Festival. And then hundreds and hundreds of medieval reenactors go.
I have
go.
Heard of these. Yeah.
And I played Maid Marian in the.
Oh, well done. Congratulations.
It was the role of my career. They specialised in Viking up to Robin Hood. So I spent most of my teenage years running around being a fair maiden.
So you're a fellow Viking?
Fellow Viking.
Hey.
Yeah.
Were you a fighter?
I was. Yeah. I learnt to use a broadsword.
I wish I was. Helga was not. She's a lover, not a fighter.
Oh, they don't let you fight.
I don't fight. I don't ride horseback. No.
But
missed all the fun things, but I didn't get muddy.
Viking women were actually quite independent. If you look at women in history, in the last sort of 1,000 years or whatever, you could divorce the men, which was like a power to a Viking woman. Like if your Viking man got home and drunk and was like, whatever, you could be like, that's it, I divorce you, fuck it.
My Viking man is home.
Yeah, they were really progressive, weren't
that's
they?
Right.
It was, yeah, it was crazy. And I think they regressed a lot in different other parts of history. But Vikings, the women were fierce. And some of them were actual like warriors.
The pagan women were like, whoosh. And they had these huge ladles. It was like completely legal to beat your husband up with a ladle.
Yeah, isn't that where you get soup out of?
Big iron ladle. Yeah, you could. So you didn't want to be late. You would not want to piss off your
didn't
woman.
Didn't want to be late in the ladles.
We should have reacted that today. We should have done the reenactment.
We should have done that.
We should have.
So, what was your favourite part about playing your character in The Vikings?
I think working with Gustav, who plays Floki, my husband, in the show, he's amazing. So it was kind of like a masterclass every day being on set. He's acted since he was about 5, so his whole life has been immersed. So that was brilliant. But also just being on the sets, it's so epic in the middle of Wicklow Mountains in Ireland.
Yeah, that must be so cool.
It was amazing. And like on my wedding day, I think it's probably my favourite scene that I filmed, but they hadn't told us how we were going to get married. And we turned up in this lake and they'd built a boat of flowers, and they were like, so you're just going to enter in on this? I was like, what?
Oh, hello, that's
beautiful.
It's great, but it kind of stuffs up your real life wedding because you're like, I never got the boat and the flowers.
Never going to beat that.
It looked really pretty on TV. That's super cool. And so do you get, because obviously your face has been out and about, because you were in the Tudors as well, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
I love that TV show. Anything historical with a corset and a bit of sex, I'm like, I'm in there.
You've got your sword and you're ready to watch.
I'm ready at home, just ready. And then your face has been out and about quite a lot. Do you get recognised around?
I look really different to Helga. They completely got rid of my eyebrows, and so it changes your face a lot.
Why did they take your eyebrows off?
They were kind of going Scandinavian, everyone
thing.
Really blonde. Yeah, they wanted to give it a look, the show, to kind of have a different feel. And dark eyebrows are in right now, so they wanted to make it completely different, I guess. dress, but it's not a good look, and I really would never try it.
Eyebrowless.
Yeah, it's not good.
You know, you'd look like a weird, like an egg, wouldn't you?
Literally like an egg, yeah. One of my friends is like, you look like an alien, I can't see if you're angry, happy, sad, yeah.
But a sexy alien, you're a sexy alien.
Thanks, thank you. But so yeah, in a group, when all the Vikings are together, we do get recognised, but very rarely in London do I get it, which is a nice thing, actually.
Yeah, you can go incognito to wherever you want to go.
I know, drunken nights out, are good. Nobody knows.
Until someone covers your eyebrows up, it's you!
There you are! What was your sort of favourite thing that happened behind the scenes?
Travis, who plays the lead guy, Ragnar, he is like a complete joker all the time. He's always misbehaving. And one day, one of the other actors used to drive himself to set every day, and he parked his car. And Travis just went missing for ages. No one knew where he was. And eventually, at the end of the day, we realised what he'd done. We opened Bob's car, and about 50 chickens just jumped out. And he'd like filled. Yeah, his whole car was just covered in chicken poo. And he just filled this whole car. Yeah. That was Travis.
That's a different level.
You know, just sometimes you read someone else's lines. I'm a bit of a laugh. No, he fills a car with chicken and chicken poo.
Yeah.
That's like a pretty medieval joke, isn't it? It's like, I'll get ye chickens. Put ye chickens in ye cart.
And it's also educational.
There you go.
Oh, lovely. Prank me again. Thanks, yeah.
Wow. Does anything ever go wrong?
Yeah, for me, the thing that always goes wrong is I get the giggles. I can't. And once you go and
that's
you really
the worst
can't go.
Thing on
and
set. Giggles on set.
In a death scene.
Well, that's the other thing. One of the other actors that died, everyone was really emotional on the day that they died. And he was supposed to be dead and he couldn't stop crying. He was like actually weeping while he was dead. I was like, you can't. Yeah, you can't cry while you're a corpse. Not desirable, that. But yeah, lots of things go wrong because it's so huge. In the battle sequences, there's normally like 300 or 400 extras. So things are definitely going to go wrong when people are like flying around with weapons and stuff. Yeah. There's lots of injuries and people falling off horses. Yeah.
Oh, medic!
Funny. Yeah.
Some of the extras are probably medics, just ready, close, ready to go.
Medic / extra. Mm. They're just like multifunctional on
with
set
no
now.
Eyebrows. It's a Viking thing.
I have been tempted to bleach my. You remember that?
Don't.
What were you just about to say?
I've been tempted to bleach my eyebrows, I have, because I saw that dragon tattoo film. The girl with the dragon tattoo.
Oh, yeah.
And Rooney Mara had no eyebrows, and I was like, she's the sexiest thing ever. But then I realised that I would not look like Rooney Mara.
I just don't recommend doing it. It's just not good. It's not good for the ego.
Did you have to dye them back again?
Yes, straight away. In fact, even sometimes after the end of the day, I just say to my makeup artist, like, please just draw them on for tonight. Can't go home to the mirror. I can't do it.
I just want to sleep in my own eyebrows.
I understand when girls dye their hair, but dyeing your eyebrows, is that the same?
Some people dye their pubes.
Okie dokie. Anyway, back to the eyebrows.
They do.
Do they fall off?
They dye everything. No.
No, and they grow really quickly. Who knew?
Really?
Yeah, eyebrows grow like my...
Oh, they're
like
pubes.
We're not talking about pubes anymore.
I was like, my pubes do grow really quickly. Yeah.
Oh, this
TMI. TMI. The Hannah Whitten Show on FUBAR Radio. Welcome, everyone, to Drunk Advice. I have Melanie Murphy in the studio with me.
How are yous all? Yous have an Irish accent today.
Ah, oh, my God. Everyone's going to be splooshing all over the place listening.
Oh, yeah, we got voted sexiest accent in the world.
By who? The world.
The world. Literally everyone.
Hannah, you're
making a mess.
I fucked it. There you go. Whatever.
Thanks, love.
You're welcome.
All right, everyone, welcome to Drunk Advice. You've been on Drunk Advice before.
Oh, I have indeed. Well, it was a glorious day.
It was a great time. And there are three rules to Drunk Advice.
There are three.
Rule number one, be drunk. If you don't drink, be in the spirit of drunk.
I'm like, we've had half a bottle of wine each, basically. And like, we're both lightweights, like we said. So I'm like,
I think I'm between drunk and between the spirit of drunk. I'm very much in a happy place.
Happy place. That's always a good thing. And rule number two is have a friend with you.
Mel.
Hannah. Whitten.
Melanie Murphy.
Whitten.
So good to have you back.
Dirty bitch.
You dirty bitch. And rule number three is don't take our advice. Don't do it.
Just ignore everything we're about to say. But listen anyway. Don't go anywhere.
Exactly. Okay, Mel, don't say these people's names. Just preface with that. Just like,
covering
God.
My mouth.
Oh, God. But do you see anyone? Do you see any that you like?
Well, these are questions.
Yeah, okay. These are the questions.
Oh, I like the name Emily. That's a cute name. I'm not going to say the names.
Mel, I'm just going to ask a different question. Anyway, okay, so here's one. There's a girl I'm into and she's legit into me, but I can't talk to her. Help, please.
Ooh, okay.
How do you know that she's legit into you?
Yeah, so, right, if you've been told that she definitely likes you by a mutual friend, tell her how you feel. But if you're just guessing, what I would do is, when you're in a situation where you're comfortable and you're alone with her, make lots of eye contact and do lots of the usual flirty flirtations and just see if she reciprocates. Because, no, maybe she wouldn't, because she might be shy. She might be nervous, but...
It sounds like you're both shy.
Yeah.
And in those kind of situations, it's like, I personally find it really hard to relate as a confident person. I'm just like, just tell them how you feel. Just like, what's the matter? Just go up and talk to them.
I'm confident though, and I find it really difficult with girls for some reason. Because I'm always like, I'm feeling a vibe here, but I don't actually know. And you know how annoyed I am at myself? I found out recently that this girl that I had a huge crush on, I'm not going to say who she is, but she's like an Irish TV presenter. Leave it at that. I found out she's a lesbian, and I didn't know that. And when I met her, I was like, there's no way she'd ever be gay or into girls. Like, she's just so perfect. And like, because I have this whole thing of like, just the whole bullshit that people put onto bisexual and gay people a lot of the time. You just think, but then she was lesbian, and I never flirted because I thought that she would think I was being weird. And now I'm really annoyed at myself.
Well, you're gonna have to meet her again.
If you know this girl is weird, lady, tell her.
Or lesbian Irish TV presenter. I mean, like, there could be many. Like, but maybe there's loads of them.
There's not many at all.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I've found too many. No.
I think what you have to think is you have to almost like scare yourself into talking to this girl, because you've got to think like that situation with Mel, like, oh my god, I wish I had
you up.
Like, I wish I had, like, what it, like, you don't want to be in a situation in the future where you're like, god damn it, why didn't I, like, mm-hmm. what if mm-hmm. and you just go for it. And also, like, what's like, you don't have that fear that a lot of people have, which is that fear of rejection. You know this person likes you.
Yeah. They want to hug you. They want to kiss you. They want to fuck you.
Well, I don't know how old these people are, but yeah. But you know what I mean? It's like, just go for it.
Go on.
But also, you don't have to necessarily, like, go up to them and be like, I like you. You can just start talking to... Also, hold on. Actually, I've just realized a whole other spanner in the works, and what? We need to move on to another question. But how do you both know that you like each other when you haven't talked?
Yeah, I know.
Like, maybe you should talk to each other and then, like, realize actually you don't like each other.
She doesn't even
clearly
like.
At the moment you just like the idea of each other. There's this poem which is called The Two Cures for Love.
Oh my god.
I can't remember the poet's name, but it's called The Two Cures for Love, and I'm totally gonna like butcher it up here. But it's like, number one, don't call him, don't see him, don't write a letter. Number two, the easier way, get to know him better. And so it's that idea of, like, you infatuate and, like, you fantasize about the idea of people, and then actually the best way to get over someone is just to get to know them. And you're like, you're actually not that great.
Yeah, you put people on these pedestals and it's ridiculous. Like, I've done that so many times myself.
My recommendation is just go talk to them and, like, maybe find out that you don't actually like them.
Awesome.
Anyway, maybe you do still like each other. That would be great. Right, here we go. Okay, so I think this is kind of like more in response to the conversation that we were having earlier about like sexual history and experience and stuff. And this person has said, would you date someone who doesn't have much sexual experience? If yes, how would you feel about that?
I absolutely would.
I genuinely feel like it doesn't matter at all. Like, it's not even a case of, oh, they have more experience, so they're going to be better in bed. Because it doesn't actually matter, because even if they have had experience with other people before, they're really good at pleasing that person.
Personally,
they're not really good at pleasing you. And so you have to think of it as starting with a blank page.
Yeah.
And it may be a case of, like, one thing that maybe having a lot more sexual partners can give you is confidence. Mm-hmm. And so it might, maybe in that area, you have to kind of, like, help build them up a bit. But, like, you never know. But in terms of, like, technique...
Yeah, it doesn't
always
work.
It's always starting from scratch kind of thing, and, like, figuring each other out and, like, really taking the time. The other thing is that there is definitely a trend. I don't know what it's like with women, but with men who have, like, had a lot of sexual partners, often they find it hard to take criticism.
Oh, because they're like, God. I've slept with X amount of women. I know what I'm doing.
My
I
ex know came five times every time we had sex. And I'm like, yeah, well, I still haven't come once. So yeah. Just, like, listen to me. I've only had sex with one person who was very... They had sex with a lot of people, like, loads and loads and loads of people. And while the confidence and, you know, all that stuff was there... I still would give a bit of input because I liked things a little bit different or, you know, people will get used to things. Say this guy, for example, a lot of the girls that he would sleep with would just kind of be just happy to sleep with him and they would just do whatever he wanted to do or whatever. And that when I spoke up and said, well, can we do it this way? It was like that. I was like, I slapped him in the face. You know what I mean? Yeah, it was so silly.
So what we're saying is basically if there is no experiences, little fine experience, like me. Not a big deal. It's more about the person and that individual relationship that you have with them.
Exactly.
And level of experience, how no matter how big or small it is irrelevant.
Exactly.
IMO. Here we go. Mel, this is one for you.
Oh.
I've been considering coming out as bisexual for a while now, but I have a boyfriend of nearly 2 years and don't want him to be offended or believe I've lost interest. How should I tell him and my friends without doing this? Context, okay. I'm 18 and female. Were you out as bi when you were in relationships with men?
So with my first boyfriend and my second boyfriend, both long-term, they both knew I was... bi and like, well, I never used the word bi because I didn't really know what that meant until like halfway through my first relationship. We had a break and then I kissed a girl at a party and then like she told me she was bi and I was like, what?
What is that? What is that?
But I just always knew I liked girls as well and they both knew. So for example, my second long-term boyfriend, when I met him, he was hooking up with the girl or trying to hook up with the girl that I had just been hooking up with. And that was one of our first conversations together. And I really warmed to the fact that he was unjudgmental about it.
Yeah.
You know, and it just became this kind of thing between us when I like... I talked to him more about being bi and we'd have these little games where if we were on a bus or walking down the street, we would be like, would we both like be into the same person here? Or if we're watching a movie, we'd be like, which one do you find attractive out of the girls? But what you need to realize, I'm going to answer your question. Yeah. What you need to realize here is that your sexuality has nothing to do with the person you're with at any one time. So someone can be straight and they might be single for their entire life. You can be bisexual and you can be married to a man or a woman for 50 years. Your sexuality is what you're attracted to and what you are stimulated by and what you think about and stuff like that. So,
yeah, because your sexual behavior is not the same as your sexuality.
I think realizing and accepting that, first of all, and communicating that if you do want to talk to him about it. Like, you're saying I've been considering coming out as bisexual. If you really... wants to get this off your chest to the person that you love and talk to them about it, you should feel comfortable doing that.
I know a couple friends, like, I think they've both spoken about this online, so I feel comfortable saying. So okay. Elena Fender and Ash Hardell both kind of came to terms with their own bisexuality, pansexuality, whilst in relationships with men.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've also made a video about this, so I'd highly recommend watching that. But in both of their instances, it was a very positive outcome.
Yeah.
It was just like... being open and talking to their partner and saying, I'm bi, but also like being reassuring in the sense that like, this is me, this is about my personal sexuality and it has no
bearing on what
on
I have
our
with you.
Relationship.
Yes.
I think that's one thing that you just have to separate. Like, this is my personal sexuality and everyone, even if you're in a relationship, is entitled to their own private
sexuality.
Life.
Yeah.
And their own sex, their own private sex life and their own private like sexuality. Separate from their partner.
Absolutely.
And so I think that you have to kind of like strike that balance of like, this is my personal sexuality, which is I'm bisexual, but me with you, me in this relationship that we're in, and that's not changed.
Harriet Rose on FUBAR Radio. Poppy Ajuda is here.
Hello.
Am I pronouncing Ajuda correctly?
Ajuda, yeah.
Ajuda, yeah. Okay.
You made it a bit more juju.
Ajuda. I'm a bit more juju.
A bit more sexy or something.
Yeah, that's what I do with all names. Just try and make them 100% sexier.
How are you? I'm good. How are you?
It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you. I've been
wanting to get you in for ages. It's Low Ride with Mahalia. Like, oh my God. An incredible song. How did you guys get together on it? Were you mates already?
Yeah, kind of. I supported her tour, and that's kind of how we became actual friends. We knew about each other before then, and then I'd actually been working on the song prior to that and developed it and been recording on it and instruments and everything. And I had this verse that I felt like she would be perfect for, and so quite a bit after the tour, I asked her if she would feature on it, and she loved the song straight away, so it was perfect.
And she's also like a lovely human being, so
she's really nice.
When like it's the kind of thing where she would see the track and be like, yeah, if she loves it, she'll do it.
She's very genuine. Yeah,
100%. It's like sort of touches on romance, but also like being free in relationships and kind of open. And I just wanted to know where the track came from your perspective.
I mean, it's a love song. I don't usually write a lot of love songs because a lot of my work is very political, but I guess it's just that it's to do with that feeling of being completely in the moment. And when love feels like a drug, that feeling that you can feel when you feel so overwhelmed that it, regardless of, it might be different kinds of feelings, but they overcomes you in a certain way. And so I wrote the song based on that experience.
Yeah, it's weird because we were just talking about this earlier, and how you are not in control in certain situations when it comes to love, and why.
Yeah.
Why, as humans, can we put ourselves in weird,
we like to be in control, though, as well,
yeah,
don't we?
Yeah, I'm so that's super why controlling.
Me too. I think that's why it's so scary, especially in a world where you can control almost every aspect of your life and your day and how you think and how people talk to you and, you know, and actually a lot of the visceral feelings we have, we aren't in control of. We just feel them.
I know, it's awful.
It's awful, but it's beautiful as well.
It
makes
it,
the world feel bigger than just inside your mind.
Yeah, that's true. And like you touched on there, your music has got like a lot of political elements to it. You talk a lot about your culture and queer identity and lots of topics that are close to your heart. When you first started and you first started talking about things like that, did you feel a sense of insecurity, or was it like, no, I want to be...
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think anyone who goes through that process of being a younger person who can't accept parts of themselves, I think it is very scary. But I guess my confidence came from the other women around me who seemed very open. I had a friend who, I think she'd been dating a guy, and then she met someone who she's still with now, who she fell completely in love with. And it really like shocked me to see her being openly queer. And I was a bit like, oh, wow, maybe it's fine. And it was definitely a process. It wasn't something that all my family were cool with, or they were quite surprised. And then I didn't think that I would just openly be like, oh, this is it. But then I was on Channel 4 News, and her first question was like, so as a queer woman, I was like, I was like, I guess I'm going to just go with this.
Yeah.
I felt like this is not something that I should be ashamed of. This isn't something I should be afraid of.
Yeah.
And so what's the point in saying, no, I don't want to talk about this now, when actually as someone who is in the public eye, you are a role model for people. And so if you can be brave, then you give someone else the opportunity to feel less alone. And so that's kind of the way that I go with things. And so it's funny, even with Low Ride, I felt that, because Low Ride is like a heterosexual relationship.
Yeah.
I felt a little bit like it's not a story that needs to be told. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like representation is important. So often I try and like represent the things that people aren't so willing to. And so Low Ride, I was like, I'm just going to do like the general, like commercial, normal thing. But it is also a part of me. So I wanted to, I think my music's very much about honesty.
But in the video, which is directed by Child, is very beautiful, by the way. And I love the way that Mahalia comes into it. Like,
Do you
know what I mean? But like, it's not overtly a heterosexual. Like, it's not like...
Yeah, Mahalia made the joke. She was like, we did it all wrong, babe. We should have done it like, you think that I'm getting with him. And then at the end, she gets in the car. And I was like, shit, we fucked it.
Oh my God, that would have been great. So sick.
I know, we didn't think about it. But
In terms of, I know that you've just said that, like, you know, talking about it when you first talked about it was kind of thrust upon you, but I did want to touch on the fact that you've said before, because I kind of identify with this, that I, like, bisexual is such a dirty word in a weird way.
Yeah.
And I, when I first, I didn't know I was, like, even a bit gay until I was, like, 22, and I was like, oh, wow. I fancy girls, that's weird.
I always knew I was.
Oh, I never
from
knew.
From the moment I stole my dad's Playboy at, like, 8 years old or something.
Oh, sick. I never knew. I was completely...
That's so funny.
Like, had no idea. So all of my friends were like, what? That is mad.
And you're also like, wait, what?
Yeah. And but the word bisexual, I was like, I felt not in the gay community. I felt not in the straight community. And I just, until people started using queer, I felt like weirdly ostracized. But I just wanted to know what your vibe was on that, because I know you've spoken about it before.
Yeah. It's something that I never felt comfortable with, I think, because of the way it's a very hypersexualized term, especially, I don't know about now, because I don't have to engage in that space so much where men freely express whatever they think to me. Whereas when you're a young woman, men just throw out anything they want because they don't respect your authority as a person.
Yeah.
And so I think I definitely felt the idea that men saw my sexuality as an element that they could sexualize, mm-hmm. that was interesting for them from the male gaze perspective. Mm-hmm. And so I never felt comfortable with it because I already wasn't comfortable with myself.
Yeah.
So I was like, it was like, felt like another layer of something that just didn't fit, because I was like, that's not how I feel. I don't even feel good about it. But you think it's something that's like turned you on when it's not got anything to do with you.
Yeah.
And so,
which is scary. I also found that scary, that someone else could have such an impact on my stuff, like in the male sense.
Well, I mean, men are scary.
Terrifying. Also, for me, the merging of your two voices.
We sound the same sometimes.
It was crazy. I was like, I would never, having listened to both of you completely separately, I've never been like,
we sound similar.
Yeah.
No, same. And when we recorded it, and I was recording, we were doing the vocal together in the chorus, it was like, I can't tell when it's my voice or when it's her voice. Because for some reason, they just melt really perfectly together. I think it's our timbres. I've got a bit more of like a gritty like edge to my voice, and she's got this smoothness, and it kind of yin and yang.
What's
somehow
a timbre for those at home, and also me, who don't know what that is?
No, I just mean like the texture of
great
the
word,
tone.
Babe.
Yeah,
keep using it. It's great.
Of my voice has got a bit more of like a husk, and hers has got a very soft, smooth sound.
Mm.
And I found that when I'm getting all mixing on everybody, because we were mixing the song.
I'm going to use timbres now, just in general. I tend to take words that other people say, but put them into things that don't make any sense.
I mean, I might have said it in the totally wrong context. The other day I did a radio interview, and I definitely said, I listened back to it, I said two words that weren't actually words.
Yeah, but did anyone notice? No.
I said like non-textualized rather than like...
No, fine.
Out of context or non-context. I don't know. Anyway.
In a generation where words are made into real words just by like four people tweeting them,
just
like,
fucking do it. Yeah,
just absolutely go for it. What is the plan? You were in New York earlier this year, right?
Yeah, I was in New York doing shows. I was playing at New York Winter Jazz Festival. Yeah, it was really, really nice to be there. And then I went to LA to do some writing and to meet some new producers and musicians and stuff, and that was really amazing too. I wrote a lot of music while I was there.
Great.
Yeah, it was really
LA
great.
LA is a hotbed of like, well, British musicians as much as just incredible
writers. It's just
writers
work.
Yeah.
LA is just work 24/7.
Yeah, but that's because there's nothing else.
Literally. Oh, if there wasn't a sun, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. It's a weird place, but I do like it because I love to go there to work, because then in the evening you can go and have some like weird vegan food. But, but it is like, I definitely couldn't go there unless I was working.
No, there isn't anything else to do there. It's just highway and work.
Walking for hours and hours. Yeah. And also everyone knows your English if you're walking, because no one else walks.
Yeah, and you're like, I'm just going to walk there. And then you've been walking for half an hour and you're like, why did I do that?
On one road just lasts forever. Touching on mental health, if you're happy to talk about it, I talk about it a lot on the show, because I think in music it's so important, and it's becoming such a... in a fantastic way, a subject that everybody, and I genuinely touch on it with most artists that come through, and everyone is so excited to discuss it. But for you, do you have things in place now you've been in the music industry for a minute to self-protect, and also like, you know, people around you that you know can support you? Because it's important to be supported by yourself and by the people around you.
Yeah, I think I think it's just not about knowing your limits sometimes, but it depends. I think everybody's different and everybody struggles with mental health, I think, even if they don't acknowledge it, because of the pressures of society today, especially mm-hmm. for young people, and the kind of work ethic that everybody's expected to live up to. But I don't know, I have my moments, and I have close friends who, like, one of my best friends moved in with me, and she's really great because she's known me since I was young, and I don't even realize she knows me as well as she does, that when I'm having a moment where I'm like having a meltdown, she'll just know exactly what to do with me, or I like, won't make a yeah, which is great. I'm very much of the workaholic tendencies, and I also love to work. I hate it when I'm not working.
Same.
You know, and when I'm writing songs, I'm in my best place. But I think it's also accepting that it's fine not to be okay a lot of the time, and that sometimes you make it worse by dwelling on your sadness. You're like, oh, I can't be sad right now because I'm supposed to be happy all the time and I'm supposed to be working, and when I'm sad, I can't be productive. But it's so like, actually, true. Without those ups and downs in life, then we would have nothing to talk about, to feel, to write about. You know, you wouldn't be able to understand happiness without sadness. So I think it's just accepting yourself as you are and not beating yourself up for not being perfect, because nobody is. And that sounds very generic, but...
It actually doesn't, because not a lot of people... That is... what you've just touched on is so important, where you think... Mm. I do it. I'm like, oh my God, if you're feeling sad, then it's not going to be a good day, and then the whole day is going to be ruined.
Yeah, and you ruin it. You, yeah. Like, you get into your head.
It's like self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like, why don't you just chill out and allow yourself to be at like 30% for one day?
Yeah, and I think we also assume that... I think the feeling that... It's terrible when we're down. It also comes from the idea that we compare ourselves to everyone else who's perfect all the time. And I know that comes from a world where we can see everything that everybody's doing. And
so strange.
Only the best bits. Yeah, and it is a very weird time because of that. And actually, everybody is not 100% all the time.
No.
And it's about how you deal with that.
Nearly.
And it's about how you deal with it rather than the fact that you have it. And I think the people who are able to be successful and healthy and happy are the people who... can accept themselves as they are and work through it and be like, okay, I feel shit today, but this is what I could do, or this is what I can do, or like, you know, rather than being like, I feel shit, I'm gonna put it at the back of my mind and ignore all of the signs that my body's telling me to just like chill the fuck out.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a balance.
Well, I think that you've put that perfectly, so thanks for sharing that.
The Jack Mate Show on FUBAR Radio.
We've got Emma Blackery here, man.
Hi.
Hello. Hey. Are you right?
I'm good. Yeah, not too.
I'm just destroying the... I told him I wouldn't do that, but I've kicked the light over. We've seen your videos, we're big fans, and you're good at what you do, but, right, if you want the big views, you have to become a happy, chappy blogger.
Yeah, I'm not a traditional vlogger,
no,
am I, Jack?
Not really,
no.
But we're going to teach you how to be one.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I need that.
So after every marshmallow...
You have to say a proper, like, catch you later!
Catch you later!
Yeah, well, however you say, give a lot of...
Okay.
So we'll pass the bowl back to you, Emma. You're about to play the Catch You Later Challenge.
Which is the same thing, but with my catchphrase.
Indeed.
Exactamundo!
Go, go, go.
Dun, 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 okay. Dun.
One. Wow. Oh, she's opening up her cheek for the listeners.
That's a different website. Okay.
Oh, God.
Ah, it's already hurting. Catch you later. Okay, one.
One.
She does the voice. I'm fanboying so hard.
Don't make this weird.
Sorry.
Really weird.
Sorry.
I'm patting. Oh my God, expanding in my mouth.
Oh, this is good.
Catch you later. There's too many innuendos on this already.
That's highbrow comedy here on the Jack Mate Show.
You're gonna have to pass that paper to me in a minute. These are going everywhere.
I might need a paper as well.
You do not want to see this paper, I assure
you.
How
hard this
does fit in a bug roll.
Three.
These are massive marshmallows.
That's three.
Okay, hang on. Catch you later.
Oh, to all of Emma's listeners tuning in today, She's doing very well.
I can still hear what I'm saying.
Because you have got a little mouth as well.
Mm.
So.
And I guess the trick is you can't chew. You're not allowed to chew.
No, you're not allowed to chew.
That'd be very easy.
That'd just be eating.
The eating challenge.
No chewing, no digesting.
Okay. No.
Just go for four.
Go on. Four.
Oh. Yeah, there it is.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh.
Oh! There's a splash zone. There's a splash zone.
Yeah, I'm so okay with that, though. Go on.
Go on. You've got this.
What's this?
Who are you going to catch? Like, go on.
This?
Are you out? Oh, she's out.
What's this?
Go to the Sylvester Stallone's turned up. Yeah, four. That'll do. That'll do. Let's watch her spit it out. Can we slow mo this? Oh, she's gone under the desk to do it. Right,
let's catch me.
Right, now it's time for
that was
the.
Awful.
This is time for Good Cop, Bad Cop. We're about to interrogate you like you've never been interrogated before.
Jeez, okay.
Are you ready for this?
I'm pretty scared.
You should be scared.
It's viral interrogation.
It is viral interrogation. Thanks for that, Noza.
What's your full name?
Emma Louise Blackery.
Oh, that's a nice name. Did you choose that yourself?
No.
What kind of videos you do then?
Comedy stuff.
How many subscribers you got?
1.1 million.
Oh, very impressive. Would you swap them for 100 grand?
No.
What video are you most proud of?
None of them.
Have I done a video of a big time celeb?
No.
When did you start uploading?
2012.
You ever thought about doing a Vine? Here's all the rage with the kids these days.
No, I'd be terrible at Vines.
Have you ever done a tweet?
Yes, I've tweeted. Yes, I have.
You ever poked someone on Facebook, have ya?
No, I think pokes are awful.
Have you ever Instagrammed a salad?
No.
I bet you've tumbled a kitten, ain't ya?
I don't know what you just said.
Neither do I.
I bet you've tumbled a
I bet you don't.
Don't get cheeky with me or you'll be out. I bet you've put a picture of a kitten on Tumblr.
No.
Okay.
Do you have a name for your fan base?
No.
Call them deluded, I would.
Joey Page on FUBAR Radio.
Yes, all right, so I'm now very excited to be joined in the studio by a band that I'm going to confess straight at the top that for a while, when I first discovered them, I was calling Yonaka. It's Yonaka.
It's Yonaka. There's so many people say Yonaka.
But it was like in the time before you guys had had like loads of press and I'd seen videos of you being interviewed, and so you just kind of, in the days of you just read it and go, I've just got to guess how you pronounce this, I suppose. So I've had my eye on you guys for a long time. I've always really enjoyed your stuff, and so I'm really excited that you could come join us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And you've come up from Brighton today, where you all... Do you all live there?
Yeah.
Cool. I used to live in Brighton as well, but nice. I had to move out because of the terrible trains.
We experienced that again today, hence the reason we're a little late.
That's fine. I also had it, but coming from London, so you can't beat it some days.
No.
And so I understand, like, from the beginning that you, Teresa and George, were friends before you were in the band for quite some time.
I mean, we all were.
Right, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So we were friends for, like, what, 4 years before we started the band?
Yeah.
And we all went to uni together. That's kind of how we met. And, yeah, and it wasn't until we all, like, finished uni that we, like, got in a band together. And I think knowing each other and being friends with each other like that really helped us kind of create the band and know what all our personalities were like. Because, you know, I mean, it's hard because you're with people all the time. So knowing... how to like push people's buttons and not is a good thing before the band started, I think.
Yeah.
Like a prerequisite.
And before the band, I know you was at university, but what designs did you have on career-wise that weren't being in a band? If there was like this long period where you was friends, what did you think you would go on to be?
In a band, but yeah. I think
always music.
Yeah. It was like kind of the university you're in, they kind of like just breeds like session musicians, like so for a while you kind of think that's what you want to do, and then it's like...
No offense, but obviously everybody wants their own name above the door, you know.
Yeah.
But like, it's just that seemed to be like the only like trajectory that got presented for us, you know.
Yes. So, do you start now to think as you're going on to bigger and better things of how you want to manage things in terms of like lighting and like video differently?
It's just when it's like feasible and like when it gets so our next tour is definitely going to be a lot more exciting and probably a bit more
and
driven like that.
Yeah, and that's super exciting because as it goes on to bigger rooms, we can be like, wow, we can actually make a proper show now.
Things.
We can like get like props on stage. Mm. We can get like visuals. We can get, you know, we're like really thinking up some stuff. And I love like when everyone comes to the show and they're throwing themselves around and it's like all these people who don't know each other, and it's just like I love seeing that because it's music's so great for that, isn't it? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
It's just everyone can go and just
and
do
especially
whatever.
I think the culture's really changed of like me and my wife go to a lot of gigs and she loves to get right in the mixer with like the mosh pity stuff, and it's like people are so polite now, or like it's not about big hairy men just trying to kill each other. It's like
if someone falls down
like people pick you up so
when we played in Belgium we did the slow stage like
Rock Virtue, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and I got into the crowd and I'd knock someone's phone out of their hand, and I'd like a little bit of time to come back in the song, and like picked up and there you go. And then I accidentally hit him in the head with my guitar as well. So, but it was very nice.
I wonder you're going to talk about when the guitar pulled out, so you just started washing it.
Oh no, that was in Prague.
That's
yeah.
a way better story. So I picked your phone back up and gave it to
you. It's just about being nice, and but yeah, that was fucking funny as well. Like, so my lead come out of guitar, and I was trying to signal someone on stage, like, you put it back in. I was like, oh fuck it.
Looks at me though. I'm like, I've no idea what
you're doing. You knew what you tried to get it done, didn't you? And then it's just like,
just gave up.
Gave up and then started like running around with everyone in the crowd.
It was a good move.
I'd love to have seen that. You should make that like a signature thing, or at some point in the gig, everybody knows George is going to like cut loose and just disappear into the crowd and maybe not come back.
Cut loose. I'm off actually, yeah.
I've had enough of.
I'm done with this.
He's jumping, he's going in.
We've got two songs left now.
I need to get you involved in a thing that we do on the show called Best Guest, right?
Yeah.
So basically, how this works is I am going to ask you four questions, and I'm asking these questions to everybody on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you've got to put forward one answer for the whole band,
okay.
And I'll be comparing your answers a bit like Top Trump. So, question number one, you can confer and work out who's got the best answer. Question number one is, tell me who had the worst school uniform?
Oh,
well, I had to wear a tie.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
I'm probably up there. I had to wear a tie.
What colour was it?
It was black. I went to this really shit school that's now closed down called Pent Valley in Folkestone.
So you're Kent?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, me too.
Where
but the other end. Bexley Heath.
Oh, really?
Up the nice end. It wasn't nice either. That wasn't even nice. Yeah.
So I had like a black tie with like a yellow PV signs all over it. And then I had this really disgusting fleecy black jumper that I had to wear on top.
V-neck?
And... it was a V... Yeah. No,
or
was it
neck.
A V-neck? No, it must have been a V-neck, because yeah, I had to wear a tie over it. And then, you weren't allowed to wear, like... I mean, obviously we would, but, like, miniskirts and stuff, and you had to wear... I think...
Were they measuring the length of your tie? There was a thing in our school, your tie couldn't be too short.
Did they give you the ones that you couldn't, like, not actual ties, because everyone was peanutting each other and, like, really bad. Yeah, people were, like, choking and that.
That didn't come in until I left.
Mine was green and yellow. That was pretty fucking vile, actually.
What shade of green?
Like, Kermit green.
If you had green and yellow in my school, you were a prefect?
Oh yeah.
Like that was like that was like you're the brainy tie. That was like the lucky tie.
I had a red. I had the sports tie. Like there was only like five of us back in the hockey days. So we had these like special red ties, and you like walk around.
That's amazing.
When we first the year sevens like looking like little Oompa Loompas in our green and yellow like blazers, and that was really weird.
There'll be some budding band somewhere listening to this going, hockey tie. That's a good name for my band.
Hockey tie.
Yeah, I think actually, George, I think we might enter yours into that then, because the Kermit green and the FUBAR yellow just sounds pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
Pretty disgusting.
Yeah. Colour scheme wise. Question number two. If there was going to be an award named after either the band or one of you guys specifically, what would that award be for?
Oh, what would the award
be? It doesn't even have to be like complimentary. It could be like someone who's always like really late, or someone's always messing something up.
Oh, I mean,
like,
okay,
all right. Yeah.
I'm always late.
Yeah.
The Jarvis Award.
Jarvis Award for most time spent waiting for Theresa.
The Jarvis Award for most time spent when?
Waiting for Theresa.
Yeah. All right, very good. Yeah, we'll have that. Question number three. What is the best fancy dress costume you've ever had?
George's is the best. He dressed as Coronation Street.
Yeah, that was great.
The whole of Coronation Street.
Coronation Street.
Shall we show a picture?
Yes, please.
It's pretty good.
I peaked too early. I don't want to dress up ever that. Again.
I dressed up as Alan Partridge in a pear tree.
What? When?
That's so good.
Like the Christmas thing.
Well, that's amazing.
I came in a big cardboard box with an Alan Partridge thing on. But
Alan Partridge in a pear tree.
This is 10 times better though. The
I'm dressed as a piece
commitment.
Of bread.
for what reason? Because it's always the story behind.
It was Halloween, and we were like, "What the hell are we going to go for?"
Someone who's allergic to gluten.
My friend was a tomato, and my other friend was another piece of bread, and it was like the shittest
so
kind of look ever. We painted it with like yellow paint, and it wouldn't dry.
I've got black paint all over everyone's.
So, like. Full disclosure, sometimes I will recycle some of these questions, some of the better ones. And I have asked this one before, and two of the horrors,
yeah.
One went as a lobster and the other one went as a chef and chased him around with like a big white.
That's great. That's great.
But let's have a look at this then.
Oh mate, I'm trying to find
well,
it.
Well, I'll tell you in a minute if you can get like email it to us, because we'll tweet it out in the show so that people can see it.
That's great.
It's pretty good.
And actually, question four is a nice bit of synergy because this question is called phone poker. Okay, yeah. So maybe we'll do this with you. Have you got your phone on you, Teresa?
Yeah.
Okay, so what I want you to do is tell me what the last picture was that you took, who the last text was from that you got,
okay.
What is the last WhatsApp group you've been added to,
okay.
And also who was the last contact you added to your phone.
Okay.
So I need all four of those things.
So my last picture is so boring.
Mm, go on, yeah.
It's just a snapshot of the directions to get here.
Okay, good. And then the last text that you got, what was it about?
Last text is to my sister, and it's because we were planning a barbecue, and I just said, I really want to hang out with you.
Sweet. That's nice. And what was the last WhatsApp group you've been added to?
Last WhatsApp group was our holiday group, which is...
As in the band?
Yeah.
Or you went on a nice holiday?
We all went on to Madrid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
we made like a little holiday out of it after.
Oh, nice.
So that's the last group.
Nice. And who was the last person you added to your phone?
I don't want to say because I can't remember his name.
All right,
but I feel
what
really
kind
bad.
Of a person are they? Like, what is
it's a guy from a band.
A guy from a band.
We were with him the other day.
That's
Sebs.
Huh?
That'll do me.
What's his name?
I don't know.
What band? Do you remember?
But then it's going to be like...
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Who is it then? That's fine. I'm happy with that. You don't have to do yourself any further embarrassment. I'm happy with that.
Don't remember his name, though. It's out of order, isn't it?
That's fine.
There's a little cat on there as well, and there's like a chimney.
And the person that you're with, who is...
Oh, that's Lawrence. He went as, I don't know, that geezer from the Misfits, by the looks of it.
Okay,
it's scary. It's not, you know, the best, like...
Oh, so that's on your Instagram, right?
Yeah, I'll screenshot.
Screenshot. We'll tweet that out. Yeah, perfect. So, if you win Best Guest, you can have anything that you like as a prize... from the imaginary prize cupboard.
Oh,
what would you like?
I want an imaginary prize.
Yeah. Hey, what kind of budget do you think I've got? I spent it all on my two-piece.
I want a house in Beverly Hills, babes.
A house in Beverly Hills. All right, nice.
And a white Mustang.
Cool.
Yeah. All right.
Great. All right. I'll put that all in the mix. So that's best guess.
I'm writing this down. I swear.
No. Somebody out there is genuinely their job's right now. Hi, Theo. Yeah.
Ian Boldsworth.
April Pearson joins us in the studio now. Somebody tweeted and said, "You've got Michelle from Skins joining you. OMG, yas."
Yes.
That's what they said.
It's really annoying that yas.
Is it? Yeah. Sorry, Hannah. Did you find you really annoying?
Oh, no. I love you, Hannah.
Is it annoying being labelled as a character name? Do you find that annoying?
It's better than Nips.
Nips? Why'd you get Nips?
That was my character name's name.
In the show, was it?
Yeah.
Was it about nipples?
It was about her having one boob bigger than the other. Which back then, we're talking 12 years ago, was not cool. No. Now it's quite cool.
Is it?
Well, you know, to have like hairy legs and one boob bigger than the other.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Everyone's okay with it now.
Yeah.
But then it was kind of like a diss.
Right.
Yeah.
But you've just reminded people.
It's okay.
It's going to all start again, all this nip stuff.
It never ended.
I was just telling you that when I did Skins that I got robbed and you looked at me like you were very suspicious of me that I was lying.
I didn't know whether you meant robbed in the show or robbed
No,
on
in
set.
Real life on set.
That's not very good, is it?
It's not cool, is it?
Not really.
It was on the Thecla. We filmed on the Thecla, which
great,
is the
great venue in Bristol.
The venue on the river in Bristol. And the unit was down a little bit down further down the river and they just turned over every single Winnebago in there. Mm. Took the lot. So I lost a wallet with cash in it, but it wasn't much cash. And like my national insurance number and all that sort of stuff. But some of the kids, as I rather patronisingly call them, who were in the show, who were new, they were the new cast in series 3, all their cameras got took, every bit of
I feel like I should apologise on
No, not at all.
It
was hot. It's
sad that that's your experience.
It was really horrible.
What's funny though is if you'd done, because I for some reason thought that you were in the Jack of Con, but as soon as you said you're like, no, you're in the Jay Dempsey, Nicholas Holt,
I don't mind you thinking that I'm younger than I am.
Well,
I'm okay with it.
I think you're three.
You're one series apart. You two would have met, if you'd only done, let's say, on or after, you were so close to nearly meeting each other and getting robbed.
Sliding doors moment right there, isn't it?
Just
a 12-year delay.
We just missed each other, didn't we?
Yeah.
That was close.
A year.
I was only there for like 2 days.
Yeah,
and then I had to go back and get covered in cake. Because sure, in the show that I was in, there was a big food fight on the Thekla. Stank. It really stank.
I mean, it stinks anyway.
Yeah, but it was like, so imagine that stale beer smell coupled with like cream that is going off.
Oh, hell.
And then Paul Heaton had to do a gig there that night that I also went to, and it was like, this is awful. It smells of bleach and off cream.
And that's when you lost your wallet, so you couldn't even go and...
No, but they suddenly from the... Obviously, the...
Okay. It's more than national insurance. Your identity's gone.
True.
Yeah, but no, I'm quite happy with that. They can't find me now, can they?
No one can ever remember what that number is anyway.
I remember
I
mine.
I can.
What?
Because I lost my card, and I can, but only if I say it all in one go. Because when I have to fill out forms, I have to do it kind of da 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 da, otherwise I couldn't remember it.
April, do you not know your national insurance number off by heart?
No.
I think that's a rarity. I don't
is
think
it
that's
really?
Yeah, yeah, I don't think that's
do you
normal.
Think?
It shows how long it's been since I've had a paycheck.
Got it. Oh, nice.
am I right?
Feel free to air your grievances on this show. Yeah, that's exactly what we like, that is. No, it wasn't. I don't remember it as a bad experience particularly because of that, but yeah, that's what happened. I thought the actual setup of Skins was, and we spoke to someone else who was the daughter of the creator, was it?
Yes, and I'm trying
now.
Jess Britton.
Yes, she came on the show. Yeah,
she was on the show.
Did, yeah.
And yeah. I said to her, I felt that the environment of Skins, the actual family feel to it, without being too much a wanker about it, was very sound. I thought it was a very sound
organisation. Well, I'll take responsibility for that, because I was 2 years before.
So you would have sorted that out in the beginning, and then it would have carried on after
I
that,
remember,
I, think.
I vividly remember people saying, if someone was being a bit arsy or something like that, going, what do you think April would think of that?
True, yeah.
And then they'd start behaving again. So it was like your spectre was very much over it, I think.
Yeah, that's what I said.
They sometimes
up,
called you nips, and I didn't like that.
No, well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. That's why we nicked your stuff.
I used to pull them off. Imagine if one day we found out that it was a former cast member of Skins. It was just kicking about Bristol going, I can't believe they fucking changed the cast of this every 2 years. I'm going to go down and just steal all that stuff.
Back Row and Chill on Fubar Radio.
Axel Blake, welcome. I'm going to give
welcome
you guys
to the
a...
studio.
I love it. Oh, the fans came as well, they're clapping and saying.
I know, they just follow you everywhere now.
You're used to this now, aren't you? You're used to that sound.
It's a problem.
I love it.
But actually, you very recently did have an absolutely massive audience.
I did.
Around you.
I did.
Fill everybody in.
So I'd done a big one-man show at the O2 Indigo.
Mm-hmm. And that's thousands of people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just under 2,000, so it's 1,800. And sold it out.
Oh my God.
Sold it completely out.
I have seen your face. I've seen your face on posters around Lewisham, around Peckham.
Yeah.
I'm literally like, that's Axel's face.
Yeah.
You've been hustling for a while. Like, you've been doing, what was that show that you've been doing? Like,
Crazy Club.
And it's been just traveling around London, even like Birmingham sometimes.
Birmingham,
and
Manchester,
stuff.
London, around London. So it's crazy. So
it always looks like a wild
and
time.
It's a variety comedy show mixed with a whole heap of comedians, and every show is different. It's crazy. You never know what's going to happen, which is why I call it the Crazy Club. It gets crazy.
Because it just gets crazy.
It gets crazy.
In the studio.
In the studio, yes.
In the studio.
That's right.
And you spent a bit of time also, I believe, like, were you like the hype man or something for some stripper dudes?
Oh, yes. He's done some research. Alex, I see you. Right. There was this male strip club going around. They're all from America. And they wanted social medians. This is the name I like to use. Social medians to host the strip show. So they called me in one time to host it. It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. I've never been so afraid of women in my life.
Really?
Like going mental?
I was actually scared. Men are usually the predators, women usually the prey. The women were predators.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I'm talking Jurassic Park predators, you know, they'll rip you to pieces. It was scary.
Oh,
I didn't want to go to the bar.
Predominantly female.
Yeah. Those, no, man, as soon as they see a poster with male strippers, they're not going to go. But the promoters was there. So there was like 10 guys and 800 women.
Jesus.
So when you walk in, they notice the men. Usually on a night out, you notice how much men are there. When you walk, they know, they see you, and they was watching you. And they didn't know if you was a stripper or not, which is why they would approach you in such a way. Because they don't know what you were. They don't know. So, yeah, it was crazy.
Just trying to take off your clothes.
Literally. So
Oh, my gosh.
It was crazy.
I've heard about Chocolate City. So, obviously, there is Magic Mike, the stage show. And then my friend was like, yeah, but you know there's Magic Mike. There's, like, a black Magic Mike. I was like, what do you mean? Yeah, what? And they were like, Chocolate City. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus. Jesus.
Literally.
I know what my hen do's going to be.
But yeah, I don't host that no more. You know,
no. Just, but I mean, you just sold out the O2. Yeah, so yeah, it's
I can't
on to bigger and better things. And there wasn't one stripper in sight.
Maybe there
I hope not, anyway.
There wasn't.
Tell me about that experience, man. Walking out on stage knowing that you've sold out. Were you nervous? I saw you had a little barber backstage as well.
I did. So I wanted to do some things a bit different. Yeah. I thought, because I've seen some of the artists, they have their barber following them, and okay, I kind of wanted to feel like
nice.
Special. But to be fair, I was weary. I didn't know if he was going to be late or not make it, so I got a trim before he came.
Oh, okay,
but I told
him,
I thought, just in case you, because if he messes up, that's
one
yeah
eyebrow.
So I thought, no, let me just get it the day before. But you can trim other celebs and social medians coming through.
Oh,
he
sick
ended up, he was cutting all night.
Oh wow,
that's awesome. All night.
But yeah, when I walked up on the stage, that was crazy. That first,
with your heart just like,
because I've been performing for like 9 to 10 years. It's always the first 30 seconds to a minute is the scariest, because that's when you can judge, where are you? Are you with me? You come with me on this journey? Okay, you're with me, and then you could just go. But it's that first 30 seconds to a minute, and I've done shows where them first 30 seconds feel like 10 minutes.
Really? Because it's just dead.
Yeah,
like,
it's just dead. Because what happens is the energy rolls off the other person. If the comedian before you don't do well,
yeah,
you have to pull it back up, and that's going to take a while.
It's like saving a drowning cow.
Exactly. Yep.
Fuck, it sounds, yeah, it looked amazing.
It, yeah, it was crazy.
Amazing.
So when they, and I had to remember, they're here for me. You know, so as soon as they came on, it's like, ah, it was amazing. It was amazing.
It's like, fuck the warm up.
Yeah.
It's time.
Literally, it was crazy.
How long was your set?
An hour and 10 minutes.
Whoa!
How long did it take you to learn that amount of content?
About 8-9 months. Yeah,
that's
so was
mental.
Yeah, about an hour and 10 minutes. And I had to flow right. And it's
an art, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
an art.
I've been going to a lot of comedy nights in East London to support some of my friends who are trying to do a comedy. And they are great, and they are so brave. And I find it's, I mean, it must be so scary doing it to a room, but it, I think it's also scary doing it to like a real intimate crowd.
Yeah.
You gotta make like 20 people laugh.
I know what you mean. I like the intimate crowd.
I really like,
because that's where you find, that's when the joke starts.
Yeah.
For me, you go, you mess about, and then you find a little gem. You're like, okay, let me work on that. Then you go to a bigger club, you use that, and it grows. I like the intimate crowds, because that's where you find a little,
Little,
I put something here. Take it away, work on it. It's amazing. Would you do comedy?
Yeah, well, that's also why I'm going to watch, because I'm watching and observing. And they do a thing called Comedy Virgins in Stockwell, where basically you go and it's like for people who are starting out.
And that's what I like, because the audience already know what they're getting. Sometimes when some people will fling on a open mic or a new comic on a big show where all the comedians are seasoned, is what we like to call them. That's not fair.
It's not fair
because the audience like, what's going on here? But when you're at open mic and all the audience know what they're getting,
it's good. And then so you kind of just take it like, oh, they're trying and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it is interesting to see different people's styles and also some people who, they're kind of funny, but there's no punchline.
Yeah.
And I realised what was, and I sort of, my notes.
Yeah,
my God,
notes.
But my notes. I was like, guys, this is all good, but not one of you did what the professional people do, which is where you start with some sort of joke and then you end your show referencing that first joke.
Somehow
that same punchline. Exactly. And I was like, none of you guys are doing the bring backs.
Yes,
so let's up the game and let's do bring backs.
Bring backs.
Because then we know that your set has ended.
Yeah. And you know that the audience have been listening. If they laugh at the bring back, then it's like, oh, you remembered the joke. You've been listening. You've been on my journey.
So,
bring back's a beautiful thing. Love it.
Do you still do that joke? And it's my favourite joke that you ever do, where when the chick's like dancing on a guy.
Oh, whining. Yeah, I stopped that. The signals joke. Yeah, I stopped that.
Oh, okay.
Johanna's looking at us like, what's going on?
Yeah,
it's such a signal joke.
It's a signal that all girls do to another girl when she's dancing on a guy and she can't see him because he's behind her.
Yeah.
And they give you one of these on.
That kind of looks like,
no, don't, babe.
Yeah, that's not the one.
Because you also do run a lot of social media and you've got an Instagram. What's your Instagram? Shout out.
Comedian.
And a lot of your stuff is observational, which I find the most hilarious, the most relatable.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I guess that's like super observational. That's
it is.
Yeah, that's what I try to do with my comedy online and live.
What really tickles me is like socially awkward situations. Like when someone goes to shake someone's hand and the other person doesn't see, and then I'm really interested in what that person does to cover that up. Like, that is so funny.
Okay, I'm with you.
You're like there, and then they
that.
Miss it, and then you're like, what do you do?
Yeah. You know, I hate this happened to me recently as well. Someone, I thought they waved at me. From a customer, this really happened. I thought they waved at me. So I waved back, because sometimes people know you when you're social media and people like, they were, hey, I just assumed they was waving at me. So I was waving back. And then I realized it wasn't waving at me, but I decided, what am I going to do? So I decided to carry on waving as if I was waving at somebody else.
The lady, the old lady. Doris! Doris! Hello!
How's the cats? Yeah.
Just absolutely kills me. So either like physical comedy stuff where people, you know, like falling, not missing handshakes and stuff, or just like really awkward situations, and I always seem to find them and put my foot in my mouth.
I've had a few of those recently. I've met a few old friends recently, and you don't know whether to go in for like one of these ones or a hug.
And I feel like me and you had that moment.
We actually have. And it goes like this, and then their hands out there because they're going to hug you, and then I just like
you just do a dance. Like, I didn't know whether do you do a kiss or do you do whatever. Like, I remember once a guy kind of like went in. I went for a hug, he went for a kiss, he ended up just kissing inside my ear, and it was like, this is weird.
Did you stay there or did you move back?
It was kind of like,
did you just take it?
Some people, what they tend to do is to break the silence is laugh, like, oh, sorry about that. For some reason you automatically want to laugh even though it's not funny. You're just doing it to kind of
break the awkwardness.
I had a really awkward funny moment. It was just awkward, so now looking back it's kind of hilarious. So I'm in the dating game at the moment. I'm going on lots of dates, and I tend to have like a kind of a stock questions that I'll start to break the ice and stuff. So I end up actually having the same conversations a few times because, you know, and one of my questions that I like to ask people is like, if you could go back in a time machine, where would you go and why? And like, it just, you know, it's a bit different to like,
So what do you do? What's your favorite color?
Which has always been like a really good conversation starter until I went on a date
with Doctor Who
with the Nigerian guy. And I was like, if you were in a time machine, where would you go back and why? And he's like, the history of my people is not that great.
Oh my god!
And I was like,
why would you say that?
I was like, I'm really sorry about that.
Did he laugh afterwards? I feel like he was joking. Was he? No, he was serious.
Well, he was kind of Well, he played it straight for that minute, and I just sat there going, and I didn't know what to do. I was like,
oh man.
I mean, yes, of course it is. I'm so sorry. I mean, do we want to talk about? No, let's not talk about that. I'll have another drink. Would you like a drink?
Oh,
I'll get
my
a drink.
Goodness.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he knew. I feel like he should have laughed it off. Man.
Maybe that's his test to you. Maybe that's his stock question on a date. Make them feel awkward about that.
Maybe.
And then see what they react like.
That was pretty funny.
Stay home and chill. Keeping you company during the coronavirus.